Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
On this episode of Plant Killers, we'll explore one nation's most notorious fruit and vegetable killer, bad dirt. What makes bad dirt so bad? The answer? The ingredients. But fear not, true crime enthusiasts. This story has a happy ending. New Miracle-Gro Organic raised bed and garden soil. It's made with quality organic ingredients from upcycled green waste like compost and aged bark. Unlike the other guys who can't say the same. Looks like bad dirt's murdering days are over, thanks to Miracle-Gro. Join us next time on Plant Killers.
Hello and welcome to another episode of I Weigh with Jameela Jamil. I hope you're all right. I know that things are particularly fraught this week, especially online and in world news, and there is so much happening and there is a lot of division online and a lot of screaming at one another. And that's because terrible, terrible things are happening to human beings all around the world. And there's only so much that we can take before we just start to snap at each other online. And so I just want to reassure you that it's okay if you don't have all of the answers. It's okay if you don't know exactly what to say. It's okay if you're not an expert on the things that you are reading about online. There's always time to educate yourself. It's never too late to start learning. It's okay if you find it stressful. It's okay if you find it overwhelming. It's okay if it makes you feel sad and anxious. It's okay to step away for a minute just to breathe, because you're no good to anyone if you're completely burnt out. And basically, it's just okay to be completely fucking overwhelmed, because it's totally, totally overwhelming. And it's hard to not be able to fix every single person's pain in the world. And we all wish we could, but we can't. So we just have to do our best to support as many people as we possibly can in the best way we know how, whilst also looking after ourselves, so that we will be around long enough and sustained enough to be able to continue to care for others for a long period of time. Now, speaking of not having all the answers, I certainly don't. And that's why I'm bringing you today's episode. We are going to do one of the Ask Jameela Anything episodes. Now, this is a side series I have where basically you send me in your questions, things that you're thinking about, things that you're struggling with, things that you care about, and you ask for my advice. Now, because I dare not be so arrogant as to presume that I have all of the answers, as I've kind of just explained in a long rambling, not rant, but plea for understanding, and plea for you to give yourself some understanding, I get people who are smarter and better and funnier and stronger than me to come on and help me answer some of those questions to the best of both of our capabilities. And some of it's tongue in cheek, some of it's incredibly sincere. And today's guest is in particular someone who I just think is the coolest. I think she's so wise. I think she's so funny and cool. I love the fact that we met because we actually didn't like each other on the internet, and she was slagging me off in a video, and I saw that video either because she sent it to me or someone else did. And we ended up in a big old altercation publicly, and that we've somehow transitioned from that into being quite good online friends. And having each other's backs and being there for each other and having fun personal conversations. And she's even now on my podcast helping me give people advice. This person who I look up to so much now, who things started off in such an angry way. It's really lovely side of the internet where you can start by fighting with someone and end up finding that you've actually got more in common than you thought. And you actually, you know, the internet can be so bad at showing someone for who they really are. And we completely misunderstood each other, misunderstood one another's intentions. And in getting to know each other, now quite like each other, if I dare say so myself. I fucking adore her. And she's an incredible activist for fat liberation. And she talks about racism so eloquently. She talks about injustice so eloquently. She talks about homophobia and transphobia so wonderfully. She's a thoughtful person. She is so much better at giving advice than I am. She's just generally better at the internet, better maybe at everything than I am. And I think you should all follow her online. Her name is Megan Tongis. And in this episode, we discuss listener questions around anxiety, being weighed, body image and sex and intimacy together, deconstructing sex from patriarchy, as well as other amazing questions from all of you guys. And also in this series, this mini series of Ask Jameela Anything, we have a bunch of other amazing episodes on Stitcher Premium. I have my friends Leah and Chris, who are a new couple who came on my podcast together. That could have been dangerous, but it went fine. They came on to answer your brilliant questions. I have my friend Poppy Jamie on regarding mental health, who talks to me so much about mental health and neuroscience, and she's so fucking fascinating. My own boyfriend, James Blake, is on this episode. That was a bit awkward. It was a bit awkward because we've never done anything like this before, but we had a really nice time chatting. My friend David Finn. There are so many. And the great Scarlett Curtis, whose episode you enjoyed so much when she came onto this podcast last year. She was so fucking fantastic. She's so wise and clever. Anyway, this series has been really wonderful to make. And so if you haven't gotten a chance to listen to it yet, you can try it out with a free month of Stitcher Premium by signing up and using our promo code IWAY. Just go to stitcher.com/premium and use the promo code IWAY when signing up for a monthly plan. I hope you like it. If not, I'm sure you will tell me in my DMs. And I appreciate that. And I appreciate you. And sorry, I've been talking for like 49 minutes. Lots of love. Here's the excellent Megan Tongis. And welcome to another episode of Ask Jameela Anything. I hope that you are well. As you may know by now, this is a show in which you send in questions about issues that you are having or things that you are wondering about. And I bring on someone smarter, clever, funnier and better than me to come along and help me and make sure that I don't fuck up the advice that I give you. So this week I have brought on someone that I really adore, who I've been following online for years now. We met in a moment of disagreement. We did not get along. We did not understand each other, and things were tense. But over the years, we have both kind of come to more of a similar way of seeing the world, come to understand and know each other a little bit better. We've never met in person, only ever virtually, either over text or DM or sometimes on a very, very random IG live. But Megan is a singer, first and foremost. I also consider you a comedian. I don't know if you consider yourself that, but she's incredibly funny. She's incredibly smart, a wonderful online advocate for many, many issues, and a voice of sense, someone that I really look up to online as a person who gives responsible and reasonable and logical solution-based advice and input to online discourse. So I couldn't think of anyone better to come on this show than Megan. Megan Tongis, welcome, Megan, to Ask Jameela Anything. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? Thank you for having me.
I'm great. I'm so excited that you're here because I feel much safer giving out any advice with you here, because especially because you're also so blunt. So she will tell me when I'm wrong. Straight up, she'll be straight on it. And I really admire and respect you for that. And I'm really grateful for our odd virtual relationship that we have.
Thank you. If it makes you feel any better, I'm also very blunt with myself when I'm in the middle of my own bullshit. And, you know, I can't help it. I'm a Scorpio. I don't know if it's from, I'm from the Midwest. I'm sweet, but I'm right to the point.
Why are you so wise, Megan? What's going on?
A lot of trauma.
What's your fucking problem?
A lot of trauma. I think that for my entire life, I've sort of looked at the world and seen the humor in it. But also, I have a desire to cut through, again, a lot of the bullshit in myself and in other people and just get to the heart of the matter. So I think that comes across as wisdom. And I'm glad for it to be experienced that way.
Have you always been this way, or has it been a growing experience?
I mean, it's something I'm still growing into. Yeah. I think for a long time, it's just been, there's something in me that feels like you need to speak up, you need to say something. And my childhood, it wasn't the time for me to do that. And now as an adult, I'm starting to grow into that and step into that. And the good and the bad of that, you know, I'm constantly learning. Even from our interaction when we first started talking, I was defensive and I was upset and frustrated by things that I don't even remember what specifically it was about, but it was at the height of me being defensive about things that I just kept seeing and experiencing and wanting to wanting to hit back at it.
I think I remember it was just around the time where like I'd suddenly been, you know, cast on this hit show. So I had this huge platform and I'd been talking about these issues that I've been talking about for like 8 years at least. Mm-hmm. But suddenly people, like the media, were acting like I'd never said it before, even though there's documented like videos of me saying it for years and years and years. Yeah. And they had centered me entirely in the conversation of body positivity. No matter how many times I kept saying, I was like, no, I'm a advocate like around the eating disorder discussion. I'm not like, I believe in body neutrality. Like I'm not trying to take over space. I'm not trying to take up space in the body positivity movement, but the media would not stop centering me. They were acting like not only had I never said these things, but no one had ever said these things before. And so I imagine as an advocate for, would you say fat liberation or body positivity, yeah, like as fat someone liberation. Who is so firmly in that space, it must have been so fucking frustrating to watch this like slim actress be consistently centered. And there was nothing I was trying so hard to get away from that label, but they just kept on thrusting it up my ass. and I would have interviews with journalists and say explicitly to them, please do not center me and please do not even refer to body positivity around me. That's not my movement. That's a social political movement for people who are bigger than I am, who are constantly concerned trolled at the doctor, at the at job interviews, in life, in love, on the street, everywhere they go, and they would still write it in the headline. And so because I understood that that's what was happening, I think that's why you and I were able to move through that.
I can appreciate that, right? Where it's you, I think the more that you start to see the world for what it is and you want to give voice to it, you want to speak up for it and to it, it gets very muddled with who kind of gets that light and who kind of has the opportunity to be on a certain platform. And so it gets a little messy, but we came to an understanding and learned, I think, through our conversation a little bit more about what each other was feeling and dealing with. And ultimately, you know, that conversation and our experience with each other was one of many where I've started to really ground myself in the reality that what I'm fighting for is much bigger than any person. It's bigger than anyone else. It's a system that it's not about individual people and what they do or don't do. There's something else that is happening that's circling us all about and making us fight each other.
Yeah. And it's what the opposition wants. They want us to be distracted fighting each other so that we never fight them, the ones who are actually profiting off of this oppression and this system.
It's and so I got a lot of fight, so I'm ready to fight everybody. So.
No, I know. I fucking literally know you are. and I am both afraid of you and I respect you and I adore you, which I think is a good combo of feelings from a relative stranger.
Listen, that's all I can ask for.
Having followed you online for so long, I'm excited to ask for your advice on this next question. Okay, yes. So they say, hi, Jamila. I consume your content to rewire my brain with helpful and loving messages about women and our bodies. My question for you is this. After recovering from an eating disorder, mostly orthorexia, I've developed a fear of getting weighed, which only happens at the doctor now. I've developed a lot of anxiety around this event, and it's developed into a big thing due to a shame spiral and strict ways of incorrect thinking about how my body should be and what I need to weigh in order to fit the harmful label of hot girl, quote unquote. I'm in therapy and a lot of the shame has subsided, but the anxiety around going to the doctor is still present. What would you say to someone who is struggling with the fear of getting weighed? It's largely to do with self-worth being tied up in weight, and I want to have your voice in my head while I'm sitting in the waiting room. Thank you for everything you do. Instead of having my voice, first, let's have Megan's. Megan, I don't understand why she would feel uncomfortable at the doctor. Doctors don't really have a long, well-documented history of making people feel bad about their weight and being incredibly fatphobic and ignorant, do they?
No, none at all. No. I've never been getting weighed at the doctor, and a nurse has used that time to go into her story about how her son is also struggling with his weight. Never experienced it. Never gone into a doctor's office. All my tests and everything were good, but they still wrote down the major issue was obesity and told me to lose weight. Never happened.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's interesting. The experience that, you know, this person is having is one that I also experience. Going into a doctor is not just going into a doctor. It is weighted with all kinds of, in some cases, violence And it's something that I have to walk into with a shield on a lot of the time. And so it's probably why I don't go very often, because it is a lot of emotional labor to not only go in and be in pain or be suffering with anything that you need help with, but also having to advocate for yourself above and beyond just, you know, what everyone else might be dealing with.
And I also think, just to clarify for anyone who's listening to this, I think the term violence has been used more recently in the last couple of years online in a way that doesn't just mean physical violence. So for anyone who hasn't heard that before, who's listening to this, we're talking about emotional and psychological violence, where you can still harm someone without touching even a hair on their body.
You know, I've had the experience of going into a doctor and instead of them wanting to get a bigger cuff for a blood pressure cuff, having me hold close a blood pressure cuff with my hand, which, by the way, I'm not a doctor.
That doesn't work.
That's not science.
No.
That's not how that works. And so what happens, the repercussion of that is, even in situations where you're hoping someone can help you or that you are safe with, you are safe in that space enough to understand what's going on with you, you lose absolute trust in it. And it becomes, it can put you in a situation where you're not even going to the hospital or the doctor when you really need to be, because you just don't feel safe there. And I'm definitely not the only person that deals with that. And it's not just fat people that deal with it either.
No, absolutely. But what advice would you have for our listener who's dealing with this anxiety?
Well, the first thing is I would suggest maybe bringing a friend. When you go to the doctor's office, just having someone there that already knows what you're dealing with, that may be in a situation where you feel like you can't speak up or you can't say, hey, you know, I don't want to be weighed. I think I've heard that you can request not to be weighed during a doctor's appointment, though I've never done it. Having someone there that can advocate for you in a time where you feel really vulnerable, might make that experience a little bit more of okay for you. I would also say that going in expecting, yeah, it's hard because you can only prepare so much for what the fallout of that experience is going to be. But I would maybe talk to the nurse beforehand and say, you know, I actually deal with orthorexia, or I deal with an eating disorder. This really is triggering to me. It's really upsetting to me. And so I'd actually request that, unless I need to be weighed for something, which you really don't.
Yeah, it sounds like it's happening fucking regularly, which is really odd every single time.
Yeah, I don't quite understand the correlation, though I'm not a doctor.
I do a little bit, which no pun intended, but weigh in on, which is, you know, an example of this is I'd have an abortion when I was 26 because I took the morning after pill and I didn't know that it isn't as effective once you are over a certain weight, which I was far over. I think I was maybe like 210 pounds. And I think the weight that it's primarily effective for is if you're under 175. And so no one had ever told me that. The pharmacist didn't tell me that. The pharmacist could clearly see I was over that weight and was too awkward to mention it to me. So I do think sometimes when it comes to medication, perhaps if they're going to prescribe you medication, I do understand the need to know physically what you weigh. But something you can do, which I do, because I had an eating disorder for 20 years, is I'm just like, weigh me, do not tell me the number. Do not talk to me, but it is dangerous for me to learn that number. Yeah. And it would be better for you to not even reference it to me or talk to me about that number. Like, I'm just going to shut my eyes, stand on the scale, and then I don't want to hear about it.
Yeah, sort of creating the conditions that take some of the power out of it.
Yeah, so that it doesn't have to be, because like the way that I've decided to kind of, you know, my journey with body neutrality is to try to, push myself towards... What am I trying to say? My journey with body neutrality means that I've decided that my body weight is none of my business. Not only none of anyone else's business, it's none of my business. It's not for me to worry about. I've decided to try and treat my body like it's a car, which means similarly to what my real car would look like, it's covered in food. And I try to put good enough fuel in the engine, fuel that makes me happy. But that is something that I would genuinely recommend. And then work on, if you're struggling with not knowing that number, work on what that curiosity is with this therapist that it sounds like you're doing really great work with. But
I think that's great advice. I also think that, you know, if you find a lot of pushback from your doctor about having it set up that way, I would look at some health at every size physicians that might be a little bit more open to creating those same conditions that make you feel safe and comfortable.
How do you find a health at every size doctor?
Maybe I'm speaking something into existence that I wish for, but I do think
I feel like we should work towards that if that doesn't already exist.
You know, if it doesn't exist, like on a website, I would say that there are a lot of fat activists that mm-hmm. compile that information. I don't know if Militant Baker, Jess Baker has that information on their site, but I do remember there being a directory of something. So I do think that people in this community probably have more information about how to get that.
Yeah.
But I do believe there is a directory, whether that's on a website or it's just amongst the fat community. People are willing to share that information. So, you know, maybe that's a community to kind of dive into just health at every size and start asking questions on some of those message boards and see who in your city is a provider. And even those physicians might step up and say, hey, I have a practice where we can, you know, make it a little bit more comfortable for you.
Yeah, this is definitely something we need to work more towards. I also just want to state, and look, this isn't fucking important, but maybe this might challenge your views on a weighing scale, which definitely changed my mind, is that your body size cannot be dictated on a weighing scale. I just want to say that as a fact on top of everything else. And this isn't necessarily relevant, but it helped me realize I couldn't trust my weighing scale because, you know, your muscle weighs 3 times more than fat, or water fluctuates. And like, you don't know if your bone density is maybe heavier than someone else's. The idea of this arbitrary number dictating what quote unquote size we are, or how healthy we are, or what we look like, or how attractive we are, whether or not we're allowed to have a good fucking day, because that's what weighing scales are for people, a daily kind of decider who gets to let you know, are you allowed to feel confident today? No, fuck off, get out, get on a diet. And so just remembering that they're not very complex weighing scales. They're incredibly simplistic and a really, really, really pathetic judge of size, health, or anything, really, even just what your true weight is. So also start to just really discredit the weighing scale. That really helped me. Just discredited the shit out of it.
Make it less scary. And it sounds like this person's on that path, you know, of really breaking that down and even having what Jamila just said in your head as you get on this scale. It might take a little bit of the power out of it, mm-hmm. enough for you to get through that visit.
100%.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Now, listen, we all carry around different stressors, big, small, medium size, and a lot of us keep them bottled up because sometimes we just have to. But doing that all of the time can really, really start to negatively impact your life. And I say that from experience. I'm British. We are told to never say how we're feeling about anything ever. And that's why so many of us are so sad. Now, a way that I was able to remedy that was by having therapy, which was super helpful for me, not only because it's amazing to get things off your chest, but also all week, you know, as you're bottling things up, because it's not always the time or place to say exactly how you feel, you know, you're going to get that hour where you're able to get everything off your chest and say it exactly as you want to. And this therapist isn't going to take it personally, and they're not going to hold it against you or throw it back in your face during an argument over dinner next week. You just have this complete freedom. Honestly, I think everyone should have therapy, regardless of whether they think they need it, because it's so amazing to have a confidant. It's a journal that talks back to you and helps you with all of your problems. I think therapy is just a safe space to get everything off your chest, to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, then maybe you should give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be super convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. And then you can switch therapists if you don't like them anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/iWay today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/iWay.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
When your space has the long-lasting, noticeable scent of Airwick Vibrant Scented Oils, you'll want to invite everyone over, from book club to the fantasy league, even the in-laws.
It smells. amazing.
Airwick Vibrant Scented Oils are infused with 2 times more natural essential oils versus regular Airwick scented oils for our most authentic, nature-inspired fragrance experience.
Hmm.
Transform your space with scents like white sage and mahogany or lavender and water lily. Now that's a breath of fresh Airwick.
Okay, so next up. How do you deal with body image issues when it comes to sex and intimacy? I feel fine until I have to have my leg over my head. Well, well done for being able to do that. And my stomach is all squished together. I mean, that was a humble brag if ever I heard one.
Flexible.
She's like, yeah, when I'm up on the ceiling. So what do you think? Do you have any experience with, I mean, it's a super personal question. I'm happy to jump in and just be like.
I've had sex as a fat person. Okay. It's the only kind of sex that I've had. Okay. And what I would say is, you know, the first thing is to understand that the person that you're sleeping with, the person that you're being intimate, knows that you're fat. It's mm-hmm. not, it's not a secret. It's not something that dissuaded them from wanting to be intimate with you. And I think that's a little bit of, that's something that you really have to start thinking about. You're so, we have all these fears of what people are thinking and what they're feeling, but the actions that are happening, the reality of the situation is that they're there with you and they want to be there with you. You know, I know that there are people who will like turn off the lights, and maybe that's a way that you can kind of make yourself feel more comfortable in the beginning, just not feeling like you're under a spotlight and someone's seeing every little, you know, dimple and stretch mark. But I'm a big believer in doing the things that scare you. So I think, you know, in situations where I felt, insecure, I'm the kind of person that's going to turn the lights on. Just, I don't know if that's great advice, but I think that sometimes by doing the thing that scares you, something that you don't think that you can do, and just being present in that and trusting the partner that you have, it's like a muscle memory of self-love. It's something that you have to practice. It's something that you have to do in little bits. And maybe that's keeping the lights on. Maybe that's trying a different position that you feel comfortable in, and then in the heat of the moment, turning over and then letting them see you. Maybe it's doing something that's not sex first. Maybe it's having them put lotion and oil on your body and feeling that sort of intimacy between you and your partner, where your body is the focus, and having them, asking them to sort of tell you how your body feels, why it feels so good, what they like about it. To just sort of make you feel a little bit more confident and to snap you back into the reality that you're there with someone that wants to be with you.
That was really hot advice. I mean, really good advice. But also, it was hot.
Listen, pizza, cake, and rubbing oil on each other's body, Jamila. Whatever happens, happens.
I'll be around in 5 minutes. Mask on, though. Bikini on, but mask on.
That's fine.
No, I 100% hear you on that. I think that's really, really good advice. I'm definitely someone who struggled because I had body image issues, and then also my weight would fluctuate on medication so much. So it kind of, I'd go up 80 pounds, go down 80 pounds. And so I definitely at first felt self-conscious, but two things I realized. One, Megan is absolutely right that people can see what size you are when you have clothes on. And so if they want to take those clothes off, they know what is coming, and they're down and very excited and hopefully quite grateful. But also something I realized is that the other lover is often, and this isn't healthy or great either, but they're often wondering about what you think about their body. And that was a hilarious revelation to me. Later on in life is realizing, you know, talking finally to lovers about, you know, why I wasn't wanting to ever put the lights on. They were like, you know, I'm fucking worried as well. Like, I don't know if you're liking my body. It's similar to social anxiety. We go out thinking, oh God, everyone's judging me. People are going to think I'm not funny enough. They're going to think I'm not interesting. I'm not smart enough. And actually everyone in that room is probably wondering what everyone else is thinking of them. Everyone is thinking, we're all narcissists, really. We're all just self-involved and terrified or insecure or all these different things. And so, you know, everyone is feeling a little bit shy, maybe when they're naked and vulnerable. And truly just working towards confidence is what makes sex so sexy. And so keep throwing that leg back as long as you feel ready, and and, you know, start with a dim light and slowly work your way into daylight. But it is so frustrating to me how much we have been programmed to think that people don't find anybody that isn't like Emrata's body type attractive. If you look at any porn website, you will see that one of the highest categories is BBW, which is big, beautiful women. So, you know, so all genders have been told to think that the only thing that is allowed to be considered attractive is a very specific kind of skinny body with tiny waist, big boobs, big bum, but very, very skinny thighs, everything toned, nothing moving, everything looking like a 15-year-old's body, nothing older than that. But actually, when people are, you know, alone and really in their truth, they're looking at all kinds of different body sizes and people of different colors and backgrounds and looks. And so it's just capitalism. It's capitalism and gross media and gross marketing and the fucking industry that I'm in, which is why I'm always trying to expose everyone in it, that have convinced us otherwise. That person's taking off your clothes because they want to see what's underneath. And so I hope that you can work towards that. Also, if you can access any kind of therapy, that would be a great thing to start working on, because you don't need that bully inside your own head.
You deserve your pleasure, you know? And I think that in general, pleasure is sort of taken from us. But also when you exist in a body that is told consistently, you don't deserve pleasure. You don't get pleasure until you reach a certain weight or until we decide that you can have it.
Yeah.
To be intimate with other people in the body that you're in is really revolutionary, and it's really rebellious. And so tap into that. And also what's helped me a lot in my own body journey is following people that had bodies that looked like mine. And maybe even going on OnlyFans or going on sites that, you know, you have fat creators who you can, who are sharing their bodies and who maybe sort of desensitizing yourself a little bit to seeing what a body like that looks like. You might start to actually find an appreciation and a love for their body in a way first that you can then bring to your own.
Such good advice.
And watch it with your partner.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, so next up, Jamila. Okay, 1 second. They always put compliments at the beginning and I'm trying to become more humble. So I'm just trying to skip that part. It's a really long compliment.
You can just, you can just read the compliments to me if you want, as if they're compliments for Tanja.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Megan, firstly, I want to say thank you so much for sharing your heart with the world via this podcast, which is true.
You're welcome.
The iWay community, which Megan is participant in somewhat. And Megan, your work on The Good Place. Thank you for that.
Sincerely,
your existence has been a beacon of light in a shit ass world over this past year. Okay, so Megan, she loves you.
I love you too.
Megan, they love you. Okay, so some background. I also have EDS, that means Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, which is a collagen deficiency, which I also have. And it impacts your skin, your bones, all of your organs, generally every single cell, literally every cell in your body, because collagen is something that is it's a binding agent in your cellular system. And so with not much of it, you run into constant problems with dislocations or bleeding too much or having difficulty with operations or your teeth or everything. It's a fucking nightmare.
Wow.
So we're going to find out what's going on with it. And I'm struggling. So some background, I also have EDS and I'm struggling with the diagnosis. As a fat woman, I took about 10 years of being gaslit by half a dozen doctors, they're fucking doctors, and diagnosed as quote unquote fat and told to starve myself, literally, they say, before finally meeting a kind rheumatologist, a woman of color, I might add, and getting my diagnosis confirmed by a geneticist. At first, I was just so relieved to know that it's not all in my head, all the bizarre, inexplicable, and often invisible symptoms. However, now I am struggling with the reality of the prognosis that this is genetic, progressive, and incurable. My question for you is, how do you cope with this illness, specifically chronic pain and invisible disability? Lots of love. Okay, I'm going to take this one.
Unless you take this, I'll have a little bit of chronic pain, but you take this one.
Okay, perfect. First of all, I want to say I'm really sorry, because it is a frustrating condition to live with. And it's also a hugely underfunded and under-researched condition. So a lot of people, including doctors, don't know a lot about it. Another thing that's really frustrating about it is that it causes tremendous issues with your joints and loads of swelling. Like just yesterday, I was on set and I had to leave set to go and lie upside down in my trailer for half an hour because my legs had swollen to twice their size. Now, I am a relatively slender person. I'm a US size 6. So that's happening to me at this size. But because we associate weight with joint issues, I can 100% imagine. And in fact, I've actually experienced this before with doctors who don't know what Ehlers-Danlos syndrome is when I was bigger than I am now, them blaming all of my joint issues on my fucking size. And that's not possible because here I am as a thin person having the exact same symptoms I had before. So I'm sorry that you went through a decade of being gaslit. I'm very lucky to have been diagnosed at 9 years old. And so I've had a lot longer than most people to come to terms with this. Things I would say are, first things first, you just have to accept it. And you have to just try to find a way to look at your body with gratitude for the things that it does do that aren't uncomfortable. I have chosen to look at my body with love and like, oh, this is really fucking challenging. Well done for getting up today. Oh, wow, my hands are working today. I was able to give a hand job. Excellent work, hands. Oh, great. I was, my teeth are bad, but some of them are still in there and they're my full teeth. I'm covered in scars. I'm literally covered. I'm covered in scars. I have several hundred scars across my body. Every time I get eczema and I scratch myself, that's another scar that's like a big keloid scar because that's big with EDS. So I've chosen to look at that as like, oh, well done, skin. You managed to finally heal over, even though you are underprivileged in the collagen department. So gratitude for what your body can do is a great way of kind of glass half full-ing the situation. I know that that is a hard thing to ask for, but with incremental practice, you really do start to build an appreciation and deep respect for your body. Like, you know, our bodies are going through more than other people's bodies, and we're here. We're still here. We're still waking up. We're still trying to get through the day. Like we are legends. We're warriors. It's fucking harder than it is for completely non-disabled people. I would also like to express any sorrow if you are someone who, similarly to me, on a worldwide level, gets gaslit about your health because EDS does not present visibly as they referenced earlier. It is an invisible illness, so therefore you are more likely to not only be doubted by doctors, but also by everyone around you, sometimes even and often friends and family and colleagues, people who can't see it on you. It's like if you're not in a wheelchair or you don't look physically ill, they presume there can't be anything wrong with you. And chronic pain is something that's really hard to live with. So just a big fuck off, well done for still being here and still getting through the day and still looking for solutions. Thank you for writing in looking for solutions. I would also try to find as many other people with Ehlers-Danlos syndrome as you can. There is a big EDS community growing online and it's incredibly comforting. I've learned so much about my own condition from this community because sometimes doctors don't have the information. There are all these new symptoms we're learning about all the time and having to tell each other about them so we can finally understand what's happening to us. You know, something I learned about from the internet is mast cell, which is something that comes alongside Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, where you develop these random allergies for no reason all the time. And they come and they go, sometimes after 6 months, sometimes after 3 years, but they just pop up out of nowhere. And they can be an allergy to food, an allergy to candles, an allergy to a skin product, sometimes an allergy to your own fucking tears. My skin briefly became allergic to my own fucking tears.
I would die. I cry too often.
It was really frustrating. And so, you know, I learned about that years and years ago from the Twitter community and was able to take that to my doctor and be tested. And then the doctors were like, oh, yeah, you do have mast cell. So find your online community. It is rough to know that it is degenerative. It is rough to know that it's going to last forever, but it is therefore also amazing to know that now you have confirmation that you have to treat your body like it is made of glass. And that's not to say that you are weak. It is to say that you deserve to be protected and preserved at all costs. I am so fucking intense about what I will or will not do with my body. I don't go out all night. I treat my body with so much care. I refuse to do anything impact sport-wise. I refuse to do anything that's going to test my boundaries. I treat myself with the utmost care. I treat myself as though my body is my most prized possession because it fucking is. And so take that knowledge to know that you deserve the right. If you want to stay in bed for a week, stay in bed for a week. But you just do whatever you need to do to get you through the day because you're a legend and you need to be protected. Sorry, that was a big rant. Go on.
I mean, I loved all of it. I deal with chronic back pain and degenerative disc. And so I have that experience of like, sometimes I'm okay. And then sometimes I'm really, really not okay. Mm. And it's definitely something that in the moments where I am not as in much pain, I can, I feel like I sink into joy a little bit deeper than I did before. I have such an appreciation mm-hmm. for the friends and the people around me that hold space for me to be in pain and to not, have a forward path, but just stay with me. Know that if I'm in bed for 2 weeks and I can't move, will rally around me to see what I need, to send me food if I need it, to check in. And I think that online communities have been a big thing too for me in the sense of finding out what's going on, you know, because I've had doctors that basically have told me just lose weight. And I did. I lost a ton of weight. I lost a lot of weight in just 3 months, and my back still went out and it was still the same pain. And finding people that can teach me and take the time with the stretches and just information on how to sleep and just a general care and other people that are going through it has been really helpful in situations where you feel like you're in and out of a doctor's office and they're not really taking the time to help you deal with something that you're going to be dealing with for the rest of your life.
The hilarity that they treat like anyone big as though they are lazy, when actually the laziness is in the doctors who cannot see beyond your external size and be bothered to be asked to do the tests that are necessary to see, oh, what if there is actually something else underlying there? They can't be bothered. Just in and out. They want to collect their fucking paycheck. It's really, really frustrating.
I had one doctor in my life that I remember was the best doctor that I had. And I felt like listened to me. And I, when I was young, so this is another side story. When I was young, I was sent to fat camp when I was 12. So I went to like a pretty infamous fat camp. I lost a lot of weight. I lost like 30 pounds in 6 weeks. They sent me home.
Holy,
I started getting sick after
shit,
I would eat.
That's so unhealthy.
For about a month, I would miss a lot of school because I would eat dinner on Sunday night. I would be so sick. I would be in so much pain. And I had a parent that thought I was faking it. I had, doctors that guessed every possible thing it could be that wasn't what it was. Thought maybe I had hepatitis, or maybe I actually was given like a giant bottle of Tums. Just take Tums. And I ate all of the Tums. And then I had one doctor that was a younger guy that walked in and said, well, why don't we check this, and see if her gallbladder is giving her an issue. And because I was so young, no one was looking at that. And he was the one person that figured out that not only was my gallbladder giving me an issue, I had a dozen gallstones and pancreatitis and I needed emergency surgery. But at the same time, on the other side of that, this is also a doctor who, when I was 13, was, you know, at my parents' request, was giving me diet suppressants. So, you know,
it's just an ongoing search. We need to do more work to find better communities of doctors that people don't go through this. It's so frustrating. I have so many friends who've been misdiagnosed or gone undiagnosed for such a long time. Mm-hmm. But sending all of our love to you.
So much love.
Next up. Dear Jameela Jamil and the I Weigh community, from the bottom of my heart, I want to thank you for creating the I Weigh movement. It's genuinely changed my life. If it's okay, I have a question that I'm hoping you will take into consideration. I think I might have been struggling with this for a lot longer, but only become consciously aware of it in the last year or so. I would say I identify as a heterosexual woman, although it is a spectrum, and I have had sex in long-term relations as well as in one-night stands or more casual dating situations. Although this has been enjoyable in varying degrees and has taught me a lot about sex as well as myself, I noticed that I have started to relate and perhaps equate sex to the patriarchy. In a way, I've started to view sex as a tool of the patriarchy and as something that we are, as women, conditioned to give men, regardless if this is something she wants. There is a tendency within me to be less inclined to have sex because there is a sense of male entitlement to sex. It's fascinating. There is definitely a trust issue here from my side, the subconscious notion that guys are only with me for the sex rather than for love, but I feel like it is more than that. I know that sex is about an intimacy and pleasure, and that women are sexual beings who deserve good sex with or without romance involved. Yet somehow I feel as if I am no longer able to tap into that when I am with a man, and instead the sex is about the guy owning me, using me for his pleasure in relation to overarching structures of patriarchy. I hope you're willing to discuss this topic, because I'm a bit desperate about this whole issue and would love to just enjoy sex with someone else again without all these outside structures complicating something that is actually beautiful and supposed to bring us pleasure. It's somewhat exhausting to feel like I'm either giving in or fighting patriarchy through sex. Wishing you nothing but the best and lots of love and many COVID-proof hugs. Fuck me. I didn't see that one coming.
I didn't see that one coming either. I mean, even as they were saying it, I was like, you know, I don't disagree with this. I feel where you're coming from.
100%. We live in a world that has 100% been designed around male pleasure. Even women's magazines, like 10 ways to drive him crazy, 10 blowjobs to give him. It's always about how to keep him, how to impress him. You know, I remember for years, and I've only been having sex for a matter of years because I was a late bloomer.
Me too.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I was putting it out there. No one was catching, you know? Just, it's what happens sometimes.
I just had crushes that went on for so, so long.
Oh, and
all of a sudden we were 26.
Yeah, exactly. So I was in my 20s as well. And so I, for years, only thought I'd had good sex if the other person had a good time. That was how I measured sex. The whole time I was having sex, I was thinking, are they having a good time? Am I doing a good job? And then afterwards, before I would decide if I'd had a good time or not, I would look over to their face to see if they looked like they'd had a good time. And then I would be like, it's like a version of the weighing scale where you're just like, do I have permission to enjoy myself?
Yeah, like now I can breathe because you've experienced your pleasure. And so I did a good job. And so my work here is
Yeah, done. I actually used to ask people afterwards, was that okay? Not a hot question. Not a hot question at all. I completely understand that. And, you know, I think the pornography world has a lot to answer for in that department. But I'm going to let you start off this one.
That's a big part of it. That's a huge part of it. I'm actually in a not quite that place, but looking at a lot of the sex that I've had and the experiences that I've had, because I didn't start till I was 26. I can see that where, you know, I had the experience and I'm glad that I had them, but there were a lot of instances of me going right into pleasing someone else because I didn't trust or I didn't feel comfortable or safe to experience that pleasure or to ask for that pleasure. And what they were doing. Yeah. You sort of shift yourself to appease someone else. And then it's looking back at it that you think, oh, I don't even know that I really liked this person enough to do that. And I was sort of shortchanging myself by not asking for what I wanted. I kind of love the idea of this person having experiences where they don't please someone else first, that they're like, this session's about me. You know?
Yeah,
I
agree.
I'm intrigued by the kind of partner you would bring in with that.
Megan Thee Stallion vibe.
There are plenty of men who are very much into, you know, pleasing and being a little bit more submissive. And maybe that's something to tap into.
Listen to Megan Thee Stallion songs, I would say, especially to like as a kind of fight song before sex.
Yes.
Because patriarchy is not having any impact from the sounds of it on Megan Thee Stallion's sex. She is getting what she fucking came for, and I am all here for it. It's so empowering to hear a woman talk like that about sex. May I offer the opinion that I don't think sex, heterosexual sex even, is inherently linked to patriarchy? I think it can be, but I don't think it is inherently. And I think a lot of it has been, but that doesn't mean it has to continue to be so. And so I would try to just get away from the idea that it cannot be anything but patriarchy. Because as, you know, as Megan's just said, there are plenty of guys out there who are very into pleasuring and, you know, being, you know, maybe even sometimes more servile towards the woman they may be having sex with. And that's fantastic. And there are plenty of people who are also worried that you're not having a good time, because if you're not having to have a good time, you might stop shagging them and they might want to keep shagging you. So everyone is concerned, as they should be, that, you know, well, you would hope you're sleeping with someone who is concerned about your well-being during the sex that you're having. And if they aren't, you should never have sex with them again.
Black them.
Yeah, 100%. But I do think it's just about maybe being more thoughtful about picking your partners, maybe starting to work on, you know, being, when you're having sex, be present of the thoughts that are going through your head. That was a process I really went through where I found myself, like, I realized this is like very early on into having sex. I was like, oh my God, I think I'm performing. I think I caught myself in the act of performing. I was like flipping my hair around and doing all the things. And I was like, oh, I am acting sex. I'm acting sex. I'm like, it's like I'm in a French movie. I'm being penetrated, but I'm acting the sex.
I mean, how was your performance? Would you be cast in the movie, do you think? Or
I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think I would have gotten it. And maybe understudy at best. But I, you know, I think I was, you know, we grew up so in, like, not just with pornography, but like Hollywood. You would walk, you know, you would see them like burst through the door. They'd start kissing within a second.
Oh my God.
I mean, yeah. no one's wet in 1 second. He's inside. He's all the way in within 60 seconds. He's had an orgasm and somehow so has she. And it's been at the same time and they've had the most extraordinary time. And then it's onto the cigarette. And the next scene. And so, A, I thought that was supposed to be me. So I felt like really, really guilty and like wrong and bad for not being able to go into instant penetration. But also, I was like doing all the moves that they were doing. And it's not very fun to perform like that. For me, anyway, some people might find fun and you know, arousal in performance. But like I was just copying what I saw in the films and then worrying that I was taking too long to get to orgasm if it was longer than 30 seconds, like feeling, apologizing to people if it took longer than 30 seconds to reach orgasm. Like it was...
Or I would just like, okay, move on to the next thing. Like if this isn't working and I feel like maybe it's taking too long, then okay. It's like almost foregoing your pleasure.
100%.
To just get to the blowjob because at least I know that's, you know.
Yeah.
So I think that my suggestion would be to maybe, yes, in, you know, invest in partnership that maybe is not just about hooking up. And or is someone that, you know, there's a difference because I've hooked up with guys that it's not a very caring experience afterwards.
Yeah.
And then I know men that are really serious about aftercare sexually, regardless of if it's a hookup or not, because they're thankful. They're grateful for the time that you've spent with them. And so I think
that snack, like, what's that like? I would want a snack.
I've never experienced. I've just talked to men that are like, but one day I know it's coming.
What kind of aftercare would you want?
I mean, I'm taking a full body massage. You know, I'm taking like maybe a meal. You bring me food.
Yeah, yeah. Toasted cheese sandwich.
You know,
for me.
While you're up, pay my rent. You know, whatever it is that you feel would help me, I'm here for.
So this is more of a sort of simp situation we're entering into. I love it.
I'm just great. Trying to manifest, you know, what I want.
For
but
sure.
I would also say like maybe... If you're feeling this tension with what sex is and what it means, maybe with these partners, instead of going to penetrative sex, having a full night of foreplay, you know, having times where it's not just about them getting off or their pleasure in a way that maybe you feel like your body is being used or you're being taken in some kind of way. It doesn't feel good, but really about an exploration and a slowing down and a orgasm not being necessarily the point, but that like intense intimacy and connection, which is very hot. Why? It's just me talking about, it's just me describing like sex fan fiction
it's
right
hot
now.
Again.
It's just...
My brain starts to slow down. It's fucking great. my brain slowed down. It's happened. So
it's okay.
I'm into the, I'm just thinking about the body massage now. Okay. So, I would also suggest, you know, I did this documentary a couple of years ago about consent, and I was talking to someone from the BDSM community who said that what they do with online dating is that they have a list already prepared of what they like sexually, and then they send each other their list. And if it's not compatible, they don't meet up. Fuck. I wish we did this in the non-BDSM world, just in the world in its entirety. But I feel like a lot of, in particular, women don't even know what they like. I don't think many women have even ever asked themselves. And so I've been suggesting since I heard that for years that everyone makes a list. Just get your notes app on your phone and write down, what do you actually want? What do you like? What are you wondering about that you've never even tried?
Yeah.
And then start asking for that stuff.
I used to take Tumblr gifts. Like there would be back in the day of Tumblr, there'd be like porn gifts and things that looked interesting to me or that I wanted to try. Yeah. And I remember having conversations with a partner where we would send back and forth like videos or anything that was just like, oh, I would love to have this done to me. And that might be an easier way to say what you want as opposed to saying, this is what I need. It's also a way of you saying, oh, this looks like it would feel really good.
Yeah. Go make that list, I would say. Go make that list and maybe question if part of this has come from having had bad lovers in the past. And bad lovers in the past does not dictate that you're going to have bad lovers in the future. It's just all about, you know, I bring this up literally every day, but my therapist saying to me that a doormat is already lying down before people wipe their feet all over it. And I feel like that can be applied to so many different situations. We can almost always dictate the pleasure we receive. And if someone does not want to give us that pleasure, then we reserve the right always to walk away. So wishing you the best of luck with that. I don't think it's inherent. I do think it's possible to experience sex heterosexually with a man without patriarchy being involved.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Want to connect with a family member who doesn't speak your language? Then check out the language learning program Rosetta Stone on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone is designed to immerse you in the language you're learning through an intuitive process. Plus, the True Accent feature even gives you feedback on your pronunciation. And with a lifetime membership, you have access to all 25 offered languages. Get started today. Visit rosettastone.com/pod50 to get 50% off your lifetime membership now. That's rosettastone.com/pod50 for 50% off.
Hi, Jamila. I have two questions on my mind, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on these. She had also complimented the podcast. I just want you guys to know. Okay. No, I do this every week. That's so infuriating. One, in the episode with Catlin Moran, you both discussed the topic of negative self-talk and how to take control of it. As a young mother, I'm really curious about how we can teach our kids from a young age how to talk positively to themselves. Kids are incredible imitators, but since this is something that happens internally, I'm wondering how we can set an example for them in this case. Okay, so let's just start with that one. Okay. Firstly, it might happen internally, but it never starts internally. We are born with nothing but self-acceptance, right? We don't think about our thighs. We don't think about our stomachs. We don't think about our personalities. We don't think that we're being problematic if we ask for our basic needs to be met. If we're lonely, we tell someone. If we've shat our pants, we tell someone. If we're, you know, we cry when we need to cry. We don't hold anything back. We are born perfect in our relationship to ourself and our body. It's kind of dragged out of us or beaten into us, the idea that we need to feel shame around expressing emotion, shame around our bodies, shame around the way that we look. It's not something that occurs to us when we first enter this world. So it's very important to be aware of that, that the external is so important. What is your child looking at? How are you talking about your body or other people's bodies in front of your child?
Mm-hmm. How are you talking about yourself when you look in the mirror and who's standing behind you hearing that?
Yeah,
because are they kids will pick it up.
100%. A lot of my body image issues came from the way that my parents spoke not only about their own bodies, but also about the bodies of other members of our family or friends, or commenting, oh, they've gained weight, and then having a chuckle about that, or being jealous if someone had lost weight. Like I really soaked it all up, because children are just sponges. So really being aware of that, being aware of what they're watching on television. Do you see body diversity, general diversity, racial diversity, disability diversity on that screen? Are you showing them, you know, old Disney cartoons where the princess has a 1-inch waist and long flowing hair and she's normally only ever white and blonde, or Snow White, a brunette, very diverse. So, you know, what are you showing them on the television? What magazines do they have access to? Are you giving them your phone? Are they scrolling through your Instagram? Who are you following on Instagram? Are you making sure that they are constantly exposed to a spectrum of different sizes and shapes and colors and levels of physical ability or non-disability, etc.? That's something that I feel
Yeah, I mean, it really comes down to how you're talking to them, what questions you're asking them about how they feel in their bodies and things that they're hearing. Like, I remember being in school. I remember the first moment I realized I was fat when it was just second grade. It was just the first memory I have of a kid in class whispering to me that I was fat and understanding at that point that that was meant to hurt me. And of course, raising my hand to tell on him immediately because that's who I was. But then, you know, you have that experience outside of the home and then you go home and you kind of receive that same bullying at home in even more subtle ways. I had very extreme, like I had a parent that was trying to pay me to lose weight. Like, I'll give you a certain amount of money per pound and diet pills and fat camps and all that stuff. But it was even...
Were you ever put on a powder soup diet? I was put on a powder soup diet for 3 months.
Ooh, I was never put on the powder soup diet. But my parents lied about my age to get me into a gym when I was 12 so I could work out.
Just sending you away to fat camp, just making you feel as though you must go away from us to be fixed.
It's interesting too, because when I talk to my mom about it, she sort of remembers me wanting to go, like me asking to go. I don't have that memory, but I hold space for that because I think that I was being teased to the point that I understand that there was a part of me that thought maybe if I just change it, that I'll have some kind of relief. Yeah. And then I ended up in the hospital. So clearly, but, you know, it's even subtle. It's even more subtle than just family picking at you too. It's how they're talking about their body. It's when they're showing up to Thanksgiving and, you know, they have their own diet version of foods because they're trying to lose a certain amount of weight. It's the constant,
complimenting weight loss.
Don't do that. It's jarring, the experience and how you're treated after a major weight loss. And it's a whole other level of trauma. I think that wanting to set an environment where your kid can come to you and talk about what's being said to them, what's being said around them, how they feel about it, and then helping them, guiding them through the thought process and the understanding that your body is going to change. Your body is going to go through lots of changes, and there's nothing wrong with whatever those changes are, because I love you as your parent. I'm here for you. And there are people in this world who will love you and who will support you. And I'm going to be here with you for the entire journey.
Also, and we could all benefit from this, focus on the inside. Focus on how smart they are. Focus on how funny they are. Focus on how great they are with Lego or how sporty they are or whatever. But find ways to build them up in so many other ways that their exterior is just lost in the pool of other things that are cool and interesting about them. That's what the whole of my I Weigh movement is. It's like, who are you? What are you? So to the point where, you know, listen, if the way that you look is one of your priorities, I'm not a dick. Like, I'm not going to tell you that's not allowed. Who the fuck am I? Truly, who the fuck am I? I don't know anymore. It's been a long pandemic. But seriously, like it can be in your top 10, but can we just stop making it our entire top 10? It can't be 1 through 10. It can be like 8, but let's throw to the top of the leaderboard there, like all the things that you are, what you contribute to society, who you are. And so I think that's a really healthy thing to plug my own movement, a really healthy way to implement self-confidence into your child. Another really interesting thing I remember is a friend of mine had a very kind of traditionally quote unquote beautiful daughter. Very long hair, very slender, big, beautiful kind of eyes, very symmetrical, blah, 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 blah. All of the traditional beauty standards. And my friend actually, and this might sound a bit weird, but it's not. And it has ended so excellently, but will warn people from beforehand when she's bringing her child over, or teachers or other friends. It's like, my child is extremely beautiful and I don't want you to comment on her appearance at all, because very young, from about 2 onwards, you notice the first and only thing people would say is, oh, you're so beautiful. What a beautiful child you have. And that would immediately create a value system for her child. So, you know, saying to other people around you, like, please don't ever comment on the way that my child looks or anything about their physicality whatsoever. Even if it's their big eyes or their eyelashes being really long, just leave it alone. Just comment on the things that are on the inside. That was really fucking helpful for my friend. And now this child is very, very grounded. I mean, God help her in her teens at secondary school, because the value system becomes imposed upon you. But I feel like they've done a really, really good job with just preserving in the most formative, that kind of like first 7 years where you really create your like neurological coding, really has done a great job in protecting the child from that like gross value system of aesthetic.
It's also what an experiment for, or you know, a test for adults in that situation too, because mm-hmm. I think we don't really learn how to compliment people without mm-hmm. it being about physical stuff. Oh, you look so good. Oh, you know, I think that there's when I've gotten compliments from friends on my kindness or my attention to something or mm-hmm. something that's outside of how I look, those compliments feel so unique because we're not used to giving them and they feel more powerful.
People tell me that I make them feel better about themselves because of how often I embarrass myself publicly. So they feel less embarrassed about their lives because I'm so much more embarrassing than them. So that's the thing you see that I bring to people, Megan. That's really great. I'm sure I've done that for you.
Listen, I
am what not to do. You know, I'm that guide. So yeah, you know, I love being complimented like that because it's not about my body, you see, it's about who I am, what I contribute.
I love how embarrassing you are. It's my favorite quality.
Yeah, truly. You make me feel so much better about myself because I'm not like you. Okay, so second question, and then we're going to wrap this up. So, not sure if you've talked about female masturbation before, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on this topic. I think that there's a distinct connection between the way that we are taught to not masturbate and feeling ashamed of our bodies. Masturbation is such an amazing tool to learn about our boundaries, what we enjoy, and most importantly, how incredible our bodies are and what they're capable of doing. I guess this isn't much of a question, but more of an invitation to delve into this topic. Once again, thank you from the bottom of my heart and my wife's. And she does say I'm an absolute inspiration, but she might be talking about you. I don't know. I'm not sure. Who knows? It's not important. Don't cut this out.
I feel like this whole episode is just me getting me to try to describe very sexual things.
I know. This is.
And I'm here for it. If you guys want to hear the soothing tones of my voice.
Oh, for sure.
Masturbation.
For sure. I don't feel like I've been aroused enough yet during this fucking entire hour.
Yeah, Jamila's got to take a break after this because...
Yeah, I need to have a little lie down. So talk to me.
Okay.
Female masturbation.
My thoughts about masturbation. My favorite thing to do. Probably top three hobbies.
Mm-hmm. What are the other two?
I think I almost prefer it to sex most of the time because it is such a focus on my own pleasure. And I get to think about whatever I want. I get to, you know, it's great. I started touching myself when I was young too. Like I didn't have parents, again, growing up in the Midwest, no one really was like, you had your sex ed class. And I don't even remember if they really mentioned masturbation. It was like one afternoon where all the girls watch a video about periods. And I was so curious about things that my mom would just buy me books to read, which was, you know, thank God, because then I could kind of go through and learn on my own. But I remember the first time I like sat in front of a mirror and looked at everything and found where the clitoris was. And since then, Clit and I have been best friends.
Besties. There are lots of little girls who start masturbating at the age of sort of like 2 or 3 or 4. And I think it's really important to be careful on how you have that conversation. Mm-hmm. I don't even know how I'm going to have that conversation if I have children, because you do want them to be safe. Mm-hmm. And to not draw attention to themselves, not in a shaming way, but obviously like there are some really sick people in this world and you don't want your child to be putting themselves in a vulnerable situation. Mm-hmm. But you also don't want to make them feel bad or like they're doing anything wrong or evil, you know, or disgusting. Like you have to be so gentle in the way that you navigate that. And perhaps on the podcast, I need to bring on a child psychologist who can maybe talk through that and teach me, because I have fucking no expertise on this. But I just think it's really important. I for years thought, first of all, masturbation was something that only men did, and that women didn't really need to, because men don't have the kind of cycles of sexual repression that men do, because men, you know, need to release something. And I was like, well, I don't have anything to release, so why would I need to do that? I'll just have sex if and when someone wants to have sex with me. Like, for example, between the age of like 23 and 26, I did not touch anyone else or myself. 3 years. Just a graveyard of no touch. That was it. And I was this like model and this DJ. And I was, you know, like I had, you know, externally it appeared that I had it all and I could have anyone, and I was just there going home for another cold, wankless night, a cold, sexless night. And I really feel like I would have had a happier life. I would have made less mistakes on Twitter or in interviews. Like if I'd only ever just had a wank first. I feel like maybe we shouldn't be allowed to tweet until we've had a wank. I feel like there'd be less problems in the world. I think there would be less war if there was more wanking.
I like that policy a lot. I think I'm going to carry that into my life. I can't tell you how many times during this quarantine I've fallen asleep with a sex toy next to me with the full intention of using it, and then woke up and nothing had happened. And it was like, oh, well, maybe tomorrow night, babe.
I have a headache.
Truly.
Sorry, not today. Yeah, I really do. I think we really need to continue that. I think Emma Watson was like one of the first celebrities I ever saw, like, just come out and talk about the importance of the female orgasm and masturbation and dildos. But there are lots and lots of sex advocates online who aren't in Harry Potter, who are very, very knowledgeable, and people from different backgrounds. We've had Shadeen Francis, the amazing love and sex therapist, who was on this show before, talking about it. People like her are fantastic to follow. Do you have any great sex follows that you like, Megan?
Oh, Jiminika. Oh, is someone that I would shout out instantly. Dirty Lola. I have a few people that I follow that are friends, thank God, but also do incredible work in this space and are very tuned into their pleasure and how to share that pleasure with other people and teach them sort of about themselves. I'm trying to think if there's anyone else off the top of my head, but I think that those two are lovely.
Great
follows.
Place to start. And
great place
as well.
Yeah. And I also think that, like, you know, when it comes to masturbation, something that I wish that I had been told or had been communicated to me a little bit younger was not just masturbation and sexual release specifically, but also all of the feeling and the pleasure that comes from touching beyond your clitoris, you know, just your inner thighs, and like even incorporating that sort of pleasure practice into when you're putting lotion on after a shower. Like, it doesn't always have to have a point beyond you feeling really grounded in your body and feeling all those sensations that, you know, yes, connect
just wake
you
up
with
your
a
nerves.
Partner. I know, I'm just like touching myself as I'm doing it, but I
touching
just,
her shoulders, just to be
just
clear.
Just
she's not,
my
when
shoulders.
She says she's touching herself, she's not.
Although sometimes when I'm podcasting, I can't help. I just do grab myself like this, and I just.
I always love holding my breaths.
It's comforting. It's not even
comforting.
A sexual thing. It's just
not
really comforting.
Wonderful.
And so that's what I think it is. It's not always necessarily sexual, but I think masturbation is a great gateway into pleasure beyond that in your body and finding out what that is.
I agree. Go get toys. Go get all the toys. In fact, if you find yourself about to buy an appetite suppressant lollipop or a weight loss laxative tea or anti-aging cream, not a thing. Also, aging is really cool and a great privilege. I hope we've learned that in the last year. Fucking stretch mark cream, not a thing. Anti-cellulite cream, not a fucking thing. Before you're about to go and spend money on any of that bullshit, why don't you buy yourself a nice sex toy? A nice, vibrating, new, innovative, highly recommended, expensive even. They don't have to be expensive. But why don't you play with... I've got a friend who's got an actual trunk. And even though she's going to go and stay at her parents' house for a couple of weeks, she brought like half the trunk with her in a giant bag and just like rolled that through customs. Like, all these different big old dildos just didn't give a shit because she's concerned about her pleasure. And also, like, really, even though it might sound a bit weird, if there's ever a place that you're going to need... some release and pleasure, it is when you're dealing with your fucking family. So I get that. I love that. Yes. go buy yourself some sex toys, maybe, you know, get into it. I think it's really, really important, and we need to keep having those conversations. And who better than Megan to have stroked herself while having that conversation with me?
I just, you know, I'm talking about my body and I'm in my body, and I just, sometimes it feels good to touch your shoulders, you know?
Yeah. Very central. Very central. Okay, well, I need to leave. Megan, this was fucking great. Thank you so much for coming on. And where can people find you online?
You can find me at Megan Tondras on most things. YouTube is a great place. Instagram is a great place. But also, I have music streaming on Spotify and iTunes and all those good places. And I have a podcast called No Lies Detected, which you can find wherever you find podcasts.
Boom. All right. Well, go find her. And have a lovely day. Thanks for coming on and helping me.
Oh, of course. Anytime.
Oh, and just by the way, we did actually find a website. It's called Health at Every Size. So if you just go to haescommunity.com, you will be able to perhaps find, it's not a huge directory, but some doctors who take Health at Every Size seriously.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. I Weigh with Jameela Jamil is produced and researched by myself, Jameela Jamil, Erin Finnegan, and Kimmy Gregory. It is edited by Andrew Carson, and the beautiful music that you're hearing now is made by my boyfriend, James Blake. If you haven't already, please rate, review, and subscribe to the show. It's a great way to show your support. I really appreciate it, and it amps me up to bring on better and better guests. Lastly, at I Weigh, we would love to hear from you and share what you weigh at the end of this podcast. You can leave us a voicemail at 1-818-660-5543 or email us what you weigh at iweighpodcast@gmail.com. It's not in pounds and kilos, so please don't send that. It's all about your just, you know, you've been on the Instagram. Anyway, and now we would love to pass the mic to one of our listeners.
I Weigh having a loving and supporting family. I Weigh being a psychotherapist and a professional dancer. I Weigh being grateful always. And I Weigh being kind and loving to others.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.